Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 7th, 2020. Section A. Travel. Big Bend National Park to reopen for day use. By J.C. Lewis, J-A-C-Y.L-E-W-I-S at HurstNP.com. Big Bend National Park will open for day use only starting today. The park will determine further reopening and closures according to the local and regional status of the pandemic, following the advice of federal, state, and local health officials, according to a press release. Group sizes are limited to either 5 people or a single household. A state mandatory mask order remains in effect in Brewster County, where the park is located. The park was temporarily closed on July 2nd in response to a positive case of coronavirus in the park community. For the first phase of reopening, access is restricted to certain parts of the park. Some paved roads are open, including from Persimmon Gap entrance to Panther Junction, from Maverick entrance to Panther Junction, Fossil Discovery Exhibit, and the road to Chisos Basin. Most trails that begin from the open paved roads are open for hiking, including Dog Canyon, Lost Mine, Window View, Basin Loop, Laguna Meadow, Pinnacles, South Rim, and Emery Peak. Available amenities include toilets along the open roads and the Panther Junction store. Remaining closed until further notice includes river use, all campgrounds and backcountry campsites, visitor center, Chisos Basin Lodge and Restaurant, park stores, and the Boquillas Crossing port of entry. City government. County attorney seeks dismissal of lawsuit. Malm says county judge isn't obligated to file budget by the end of July. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Midland County Attorney Russell Malm requested Thursday for the court to dismiss District Attorney Laura Nodolf's lawsuit against County Judge Terry Johnson that resulted from a disagreement over the timeline for filing the county budget. Nodolf filed a civil suit Wednesday alleging Johnson failed to fulfill his public duties to prepare and file the county budget. She asked for the budget to be filed immediately with the county clerk and that a mandate be set by the court ordering the budget to be filed by July 31st in future years. She cited the state local government code, which states that the county judge must prepare a county budget in the 7th or 10th month of the fiscal year, the month is determined by the commissioner's court, to cover all proposed expenditures for the upcoming fiscal year. In an official response to the lawsuit and motion to dismiss, Malm argues that while the county judge is required to prepare a budget in July, the 10th month of the fiscal year, he is not obligated to file the budget by the end of July. Local government code does not require or mandate that the proposed budget be filed in July. It merely requires the preparation for the proposed budget, he states in the motion. Malm states that a mandate to file the budget by July 31st would misappropriate the pen of the Texas legislature and enforce an arbitrary requirement not found in state law. He also argues that the filing of a county budget can't be enforced through a lawsuit, citing previous court cases that appear to show that precedent. The county budget has been filed in the beginning of August for the past 10 years, according to the motion. County records show the budget was filed on August 8th last year. Nodolf requested an expedited hearing on the suit, but no time was set for the hearing as of Wednesday evening. The hearing was delayed after the judge first assigned to the case recused himself. It has now been assigned to Ector County 385th District Court Judge Stacy Trotter. Johnson told the Reporter-Telegram the budget would be filed with the county clerk's office on Thursday, at which point it would be available for inspection by any party and published on Midland County's website. The proposal was not yet published on the county's website as of Thursday afternoon. MISD. James Fuller seeks another term on the Board of Trustees by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. The election to represent Midland ISD District 1 will again involve James Fuller. The longest-serving member of the Board of Trustees has filed for another term to lead East Midland. District 1 is bordered by Loop 250 to the north and includes areas around the following campuses: Milam Elementary, Lee Freshman, Pease Communications and Technology, Coleman High School, General Tommy Franks Elementary, Washington STEM Academy, and Carver Center. Fuller will be opposed by Matt Galindo and Michael Booker. All three have filed with the district to be on the November 3rd ballot. Fuller told the Reporter Telegram that achieving the academic excellence tops the list of goals for the next 4 years. He said he would like to see schools moving off the Texas Education Agency's list of underachieving schools. The dean of MISD board members also wants to see all students realize equitable treatment across the district. He said a district can have an equal number of campuses and an equal number of teachers in those schools, but there isn't equity until Midland ISD addresses the pertinent needs of students and the men and women teaching those students at their level. Fuller also said diversity of demographics and school system material needs to be addressed. Curriculum must be designed so students will see themselves in the material, Fuller said. That is part of realizing equity in the instructional process. Fuller, who was first elected to the board in 1988, attended segregated and desegregated schools in San Angelo. He's also worked to secure single-member school districts during his decades in education. An educator by occupation, he is a Texas Association of School Boards certified master trustee, and he was on the board that worked with the Texas Education Agency to create the district's Lone Star Governance Plan. He lists that governance plan as a highlight for the last 4 years, along with hiring Superintendent Orlando Riddick, improving the Midland Alternative Program, the board's work on housing and higher salaries for teachers and staff, and the district's building of Bunch, Faskin, and Yarborough elementaries. Other improvements include increased graduation rates, the purchase of land for a new high school, a decline in the district's dropout rate, and improved athletic facilities across MISD. Mr. Riddick has brought to the table the type of change that will result in positive and strong outcomes, Fuller said. It will take time. That is what people in my district and in the community must understand. We didn't get where we are overnight, and we will not get where we need to go overnight. Fuller said reconfiguration heads the list of things to accomplish in the next 4 years and beyond. He believes having freshmen off the island onto themselves will help them acclimate to the high school environment, challenge those students to perform, and raise the expectations for every child. Other goals Fuller lists are the elimination of low-performing schools, accomplishing the latest round of goal progress measures, continued enhancement of technology, continued innovative academic initiatives, and salary increases. Fuller added that he knows parents in District 1 are committed to working with teachers, principals, counselors, and social workers at the schools their children attend. He also said communicating the importance of the Lone Star governance goals will be a priority, as will delivering clear, deliberate, and frank information to constituents about education. The filing period continues through 5 p.m. August 17th. Tax-free weekend starts today. School will be starting this month, and that means it's time for back-to-school shopping. The sales tax holiday in Texas is today through Sunday. Items that qualify as tax-free include most clothing and footwear, school supplies, and backpacks. Purchases may be made in-store or online according to the State Comptroller's Office website. For more information, go to comptroller/texas.gov. Virus-related deaths up by 31 since July 1st. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. The Midland Health Department reported another coronavirus-related death involving a Midland County resident, the 46th of the pandemic. The male, in his 80s, who was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, died Thursday, according to the City of Midland. The fatality is the fourth this month, the 21st in the last 2.5 weeks, and the 31st involving a Midland County resident since the beginning of July. The health department also reported the number of coronavirus cases continued its spike Thursday with 78 new cases reported. Today's new cases are reflective of lab results from July 31st through August 2nd, according to a press release from the city. The new cases bring the total this week to 392, already the second most of any week going back to mid-March. If at least 27 are reported today, a new high mark for cases in a week inside Midland County will be established. The average number of cases reported on Tuesday through Thursday has been 69. There have been 2,570 cases reported during the pandemic. The health department also reported 1,326 recoveries and 794 isolated cases. Another 263 cases are under investigation and 141 described as unable to locate or refused.
Hello, this is Michael reading another local article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, August 7th. City of Odessa. Man allegedly set himself on fire. By J.C. Lewis. One man is dead after intentionally setting himself on fire Wednesday night in Odessa, according to the city spokeswoman. Odessa Fire Rescue Units and the Fire Marshal's Division responded at about 7 p.m. to a structure fire in the 1900 block of North Hancock Avenue. The fire was contained to a detached cinder block storage unit at the rear of the residence. A body was found, and investigators determined the man had intentionally set himself on fire, according to the release. The body was sent to Lubbock County for an autopsy. The fire is still under investigation.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, August 7, 2020. Cups of Gratitude. Doug McIntyre enjoys a fresh coffee May 1 at Higher Grounds Coffee, 403 Andrews Highway. The shop is partnering with Eagle Claw Midstream for Cups of Gratitude, providing free cups of coffee to essential personnel. Eagle Claw teams up with Higher Grounds. Eagle Claw Midstream is sponsoring a Cups of Gratitude program with Higher Grounds Coffee, a Midland shop. Educators, law enforcement personnel, emergency responders, and hospital employees may receive a free cup of coffee during the month of August, according to a press release from the company. Also, Eagle Claw is donating an electrostatic sprayer to Pecos Toya ISD for sanitizing its school buildings. Since the beginning of the year, Eagle Claw has donated $50,000 to Midland area hospitals to purchase personal protective equipment and $5,000 to Jonas House Food Pantry in Carlsbad, New Mexico. And the company and its employees have raised more than $33,000 for the West Texas Food Bank, said Jamie Welch, president and CEO. These donations are really about showing our appreciation to those who faced extraordinary challenges over the past months due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Welch said. Census takers to begin knocking on doors. Census takers will be knocking on doors beginning today to collect responses from households that have not yet responded, according to an email from the city spokeswoman. They will follow social distancing protocols and all applicable state and local requirements with regard to health and safety. To verify that a person is a census taker, ask to see their ID badge, which has their photograph, a U.S. Department of Commerce watermark, and an expiration date. Residents can also call 844-330-2020 to speak with a U.S. Census Bureau representative. For more information or to respond to the 2020 census, go to www.2020census.gov or call 800-844-2020. Housing entities receive CARE Act funds. Washington. Midland County Housing Authority was among area entities to receive federal funds to help public housing authorities recover from the economic fallout of the coronavirus outbreak, U.S. Senator John Cornyn announced Thursday. The funding is part of the CARES Act. The Housing Authority received $80,313, according to a press release from Cornyn's office. Housing Authority of Odessa received $154,143 and $2,374, and Big Spring Housing Authority received $61. As Texans continue to grapple with the impact of the coronavirus outbreak, it's critical that we continue to do everything we can to shield them from the economic fallout, Cornyn said in a statement. I'll continue to do everything I can to encourage economic recovery in the Midland-Odessa area amid this deadly pandemic. Washington Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Washington is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. City updates watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Today in Texas history. In 1989, a plane carrying U.S. Representative Mickey Leland, Democrat, Texas, and 14 others disappeared over Ethiopia. The wreckage of the plane was found 6 days later. There were no survivors. Today in history. Today is Friday, August 7, the 220th day of 2020. There are 146 days left in the year. On this date, in 1782, General George Washington created the Order of the Purple Heart, a decoration to recognize merit in enlisted men and non-commissioned officers.
Midland Reporter-Telegram, Opinion, Friday, August 7th. Opinion Extra. MISD and other districts might have opened doors for creating online academies. School reentry is again the subject of the day. As I previously talked about, there is the potential for students being away from campus for 8 weeks, which equates to 1 week short of a quarter of the school year. There's not much MISD can say to satisfy those who are negatively impacted by this decision, including children who aren't able to attend school on campus, socialize, be around positive influences like teachers, and otherwise have a normal learning situation. But there are some Midland ISD staff who replied in a survey that they favored an online start. It is easy to understand that some people will be confused to hear that school is at home only, while watching extracurriculars, including football, volleyball, and band, that will not always operate with 6 feet in between participants. This sends a mixed message. But by starting school online, Midland ISD and other school districts across the state might have opened the doors to a change in education that I expect will be felt for decades moving forward, because, in essence, they have said a quality, taxpayer-funded education can take place at home. In fact, Midland ISD was set to start its online academy regardless of its coronavirus-related decisions. Making the statement that taxpayer-funded education can take place online certainly opens the door to online academy operators turning up the politicking for state funding that, before COVID-19, would have been impossible to justify. Those operators will be able to say they can do the same things as in-person charter schools and be eligible for taxpayer funds. Let me be clear, this isn't something that I would lobby for, but it is something I can see happening. The next legislative session begins in January, after all, and polls that show people, including school leaders, teachers, and parents, who want online academies will be put front and center, as will all the concerns about health taking priority. Proponents will say that online academies can bring more academic choice to parents, more competition among education organizations, and can do so for less. And don't discount that argument when funds for the next biennium will be scarcer. And as I have said before, Midland ISD probably had no choice this week, but that doesn't mean there won't be some wanting to take advantage of the door our school leaders inadvertently opened. And those people are likely to walk right in, and a new front in the battle for education dollars will likely emerge. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com.
Obituaries. On Tuesday, August 4th, at 9:25 a.m., Wanda B. Ramirez went to be with our Lord in heaven. born in Midland, Texas on July 12, 1952, to Grace and Tommy Bales of El Paso. She was a devoted mother and grandmother who loved Tejano music and classical movies. She is preceded in death by her mother and two brothers. Viewing and rosary will be Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., rosary starting at 7 p.m., both at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Services are under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net. Frederico C. Ramirez, 65 of Midland, passed away Thursday, July 23rd. A memorial service will be held Friday, August 7th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. He is survived by his wife, Graciela, four sons, three daughters, three brothers, three sisters, 23 grandchildren, 14 great-grandchildren, and 16 great-great-grandchildren, plus numerous nephews, nieces, and cousins.
Hi, this is Linda, the Odessa American for Friday, August 7th, 2020. Section A. Current Councilman Seeks Mayor Slot by Michael Merlot. As current District 2 Councilman Dewey Bryant terms out of his position, he looks to become mayor, he said, because he wants to continue to serve the community while moving forward from COVID-19 and an economic downturn. It is going to get better, he said during a phone interview. It is going to turn around and we need to be ready and move forward. While some expressed concerns that switching seats after terming out doesn't follow the spirit of term limits, Bryant said he isn't concerned with that because there are still things City Council needs to do. We've had a lot of things done in regard to studies completed and things that we need to continue to get done because they have not been accomplished, and it's important that we move forward to accomplish those different things that are associated with our growth, with our infrastructure. Bryant said stability is important with the economy, and especially in a place that he called the epicenter of the energy world, which he said is something that the community should have pride in. I think it's also important that familiarity with the things that are happening within our wonderful city is there, and I can bring all those to the board. Bryant has experience on the City Council and said he wouldn't have to go through a learning curve and would have plenty of knowledge of the current issues impacting the city. He said that a mayor represents the city and is also a gatherer of the truth. There are so many citizens within this community who have goals of making something happen within this city, and I think it's important that we utilize these tremendous citizens, these people who are passionate about this city. It takes the team, he said, adding that the mayoral position for him would be about the community of Odessa. Bryant would not comment on the current lawsuit between the Odessa American and the city that challenges the city's illegal practice of concealing public information related to crime. Some officials reportedly sought to slow public information from being published following a mass shooting in Odessa, August 31st, 2019. Bryant said that he hopes that all the local entities can move forward to help propel each other in the right direction, and that includes communication with the news media. We need to work together to pat each other on the back to overcome the adversity we've had in front of us. That's important. It's so important that we all work together. We're coming off some huge challenges and disruptions that we've had within not only our community, but within our world with the COVID and the oil and gas economy, he said. COVID-19 has caused certain open meetings regulations to be eased, and Bryant said communication has become even more important because people cannot simply talk face-to-face like they used to if there was an issue. That causes us to have to communicate more, he said, and it's so important, especially with the restrictions, that we work hard on our communication within the various different facets of our wonderful community. Dewey talked about a collective in reference to his work in city council, and being a part of the council to him is about being a part of the community. With the Odessa Development Corporation spending funds on coronavirus and the Permian Fuels America campaign, Bryant said that those are both good ways for them to help the local economy. The importance of our community needs to be known, he said. He said that while the Permian Basin is one of the most important oil regions in the world, we need to have that portrayed. They need to know that. I think the education that we're providing and the advertising and the education accordingly that has been done right now is just exciting. We are what we are. We are an energy epicenter. And is there anything wrong with that? Heavens no, he said. Bryant said that he's been in the banking industry in the Permian Basin since 1982. And one thing that he wishes people could figure out is how to level off an oil bust. He said that the message of the Permian Fuels America is to buy American oil, and that could help stabilize the community. Bryant's application detailed that he is the CEO of Southwest Bank. He said he's been fortunate to work in a service job like a banking industry. We are here because of others. And I think there are many different things that we tend to forget sometimes, he said, adding that his work has helped him understand numbers and businesses as an elected official. As far as who he supports for other positions, Bryant said he supports anyone working towards a goal that will benefit our whole community. Bryant was the only applicant who filed for mayor until Wednesday evening, when former city councilman Javier Hovan filed his application as well for mayor. Want to run? Seats open in the November election are districts 1 and 2 and the at-large city council seat, as well as mayor. Deadline to file to run is 5 p.m. August 17th to finish required petitions, which consist of gathering 50 registered voter signatures in the area in which their position is sought, or any Odessa registered voter for mayor or at-large. Who has filed? Mayor Dewey Bryant and Javier Hovan, District 1, Eddie Mitchell, District 2, Stephen Thompson, at large, Denise Swanner and Joanne Davenport Littleton. Phased in opening to take a little longer by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD is starting school Wednesday, but the first phase of the restart will be longer than originally planned due to the prevalence of COVID-19 cases in the community. Right now, as we shared really throughout the summer, the start of school is completely dependent upon the medical situation, really the health and wellness of our community, Superintendent Scott Murray said in a media call Wednesday. Three data points caused us some concern, and therefore we've had to extend the phase-in period. Murray said the positivity rate for Ector County currently stands at 19.6%. The positivity rate is the percentage of people who test positive for COVID-19 out of all tests conducted, the Johns Hopkins University website stated. The second piece that we are looking at is the hospitalization rate, so the number of individuals who are currently in the hospital right now. That rate has been declining, so that's good news for our community. The rate of people being admitted to the hospital is on the decline, he said. The third thing is the number of people in our community testing positive. That data is on the decline, but none of those data points are where we need them to be as a community. Because of that, we've had to extend the amount of time that we're going to phase in, Murray said. The way the community can control these factors, he said, is by ensuring that everyone practices social distancing, washes their hands clean, and wears a mask whenever they leave their house. If we as a community do those things, those numbers will significantly decline, so we are extending our phase one period, Murray said. The first day of school is still Wednesday, but most students will start in a virtual environment. Those who attend school will have to undergo screening before coming into the building. Those students starting face-to-face with us on August 12th are the students in ECISD who do not have internet access in their homes. So if you're a family and you do not have internet access, you'll be allowed to come to school August 12th, Murray said. The second group of kids is special education students, and special ed parents need to work with your special education teachers to make this determination of, is this indeed the best choice for your child? He added, we're going to welcome our three-year-olds. Our two pre-K centers both serve three-year-olds, and we will welcome those kids back August 12th. Then finally, the children of ECISD employees. We're bringing those children back pre-K through 8th so our staffers can support and educate the children of our community. Phase 2 will start August 26th, 2 weeks after the start of school August 12th. I will also say that the start date is pending the health and wellness of our community. So next week will be 2 weeks away from this August 26th date, and we will once again monitor the health and wellness of our community. If we see that those numbers are in good shape and are trending in the right direction, then we will hopefully be able to bring our Phase 2 students back on the 26th. But if next Wednesday our numbers do not look healthy as a community, then we may need to extend that two-week phase into potentially 3 weeks or more, maybe, Murray said. Phase 3 is scheduled to start September 1st and Phase 4 on September 8th. Murray stressed that this is all contingent upon community health conditions. On the subject of registration, Murray said it is important that parents complete the process for each child in their home. It is critically important as we plan for the education of your children on August 12th. For families who need computers for their students, for example, Murray said they must be registered. This can be accomplished by visiting the ECISD website. If families don't have internet access, they can visit their local school. All of our schools have computers available. You can do that electronically at any one of our schools or in that face-to-face environment. But again, that needs to be done as soon as you possibly can so that we can make arrangements to receive the 34,000 kids that we expect to start serving on Wednesday, August 12th. Murray noted that the remote learning experience will be different in the fall compared to last spring because there will be teachers assigned to virtual learning at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. There will be synchronous and asynchronous learning. For synchronous learning, the teacher will be live with the students. Some portion of the student's day will be live with the teacher through a technology device, such as a laptop or an iPad, or in some cases, through the telephone. Asynchronous learning will not be live with a teacher, but students will be completing assignments, working on a project, or collaborating with some of their peers on the phone, Murray said. Many of our teachers will also be recording those synchronous lessons if for some reason a student is not able to be present during that live experience. They may be able to watch that video later on in the evening. It's not live, but it's a recording of that experience from earlier in the day. We would consider that asynchronous learning, but both of those are options for our kids, he added. What is important is that every child engage with their teacher every single day, whether you're face-to-face in the classroom or you're in the virtual environment at home. Our teachers will provide engaging lessons and experiences for our kids every single day in both the synchronous manner and asynchronous manner. Murray said the written communication issued by ECISD has been in English and Spanish. We also provide support to any of our Spanish-speaking grandparents who wish to contact a teacher. If the teacher is unable to speak the Spanish language, then we have other individuals either on campus or available at the central office who can help translate that conversation between the teacher and the grandparents, he added. For students who are English learners, there are English learner teachers assigned to them to provide instruction. That is both in English and Spanish, and they also communicate with our families. So a variety of ways that our non-English speaking families can engage with their school. But I would encourage all of those families to reach out directly to their schools. Each of our schools do have employees who are able to translate and or communicate with our families in Spanish, Marie said. As far as attendance, students will have to submit assignments daily to show they are making progress in their work. Typically, teachers know their students are there because they're having in-person classes. In fact, today, August 5th, we welcomed our teachers back, and they began to learn today about this new way of taking attendance in a COVID-19 world, which is very different from the way we've always taken attendance in the school setting. So our students and parents will learn about that once school begins next week, Murray said. A parent survey conducted at the beginning of July showed that about 65% of ECISD families requested face-to-face instruction, either hybrid or full-time, 5 days a week, and 35% requested virtual. In our most recent survey, once our parents had made decisions about what they wanted for their families, our elementary and middle school students, so pre-K through 8th, was about 50-50. About 50% of the families requested virtual, and approximately 50% of those families requested either hybrid or face-to-face, Murray said. At the high school, it was a little different. Approximately 55% of our high school students requested completely virtual, and about 45% of our high school students requested face-to-face, Murray said. That is clearly a change from what was happening during the month of July. The most interesting factor in those numbers, he said, was that they were expecting the opposite figures. We also weren't quite sure the comfort level of our community. Our health condition has continued to deteriorate over the last several weeks, and we knew that was going to have an impact on the choices our families were making, but we weren't quite sure what that would be. Now we know that there's clearly a split in our community. Approximately half in our community are comfortable with their kids at school, and half our community would rather keep their kids home, at least for now, Murray said. Parents can change their minds at the end of the phase-in process. Once phase four is finished, that is an opportunity for parents to change their mind. Then, from that point forward to the end of every single grading period, a parent can change their mind. So you can switch from hybrid or face-to-face to virtual. But again, the end of every grading period or the end of the phase-in process, Murray said. COVID-19 news. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 3,512. Ector County negative, 16,557 out of 20,285 tested, with 216 pending, 54 deaths. Recovered, 2,604. Active, 854. Midland County, 2,570 confirmed, 46 deaths. Texas, 467,485 confirmed, with 3,944,480 tested. Total Texas deaths, 7,803. U.S. cases, 4,802,491 total confirmed, and 157,631 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. 39th MCH death. A 52-year-old man reportedly died Thursday morning from COVID-19-related complications at Medical Center Hospital. An MCH press release detailed that the man, who had pre-existing conditions, was from San Angelo and was admitted to MCH July 23rd. The release detailed this as the 39th COVID-19-related death of an MCH patient. As of 3 p.m. Thursday, MCH reported that 22 COVID-19 positive patients are in the hospital. 8 are in the critical care unit, 6 on ventilators, and the other 14 patients are on the COVID-19 isolation floors, 7 central. Quick hits. Campaign kickoff. United Way of Odessa 2020 campaign kickoff has been scheduled for was held today at the Connection Christian Church rear parking lot on Tanglewood Lane. Guest speaker was Scott Murray, superintendent of ECISD. Roy Garcia, United Way of Odessa 2020 campaign chair, announced the 2020 campaign goal. There was a balloon release. The campaign is scheduled to run from August through November. This evening, the Barn Door Steakhouse, 2140 Andrews Highway, will conduct Raise the Stakes, a dining event where 10% of all proceeds from 5 to 9 p.m. will benefit the United Way of Odessa. Founded in 1951, United Way of Odessa supports local programs that impact one in every three Odessans. Local volunteers are involved in every aspect of the United Way process, from fundraising to funding allocations. Currently, the United Way of Odessa partners with 22 local partner agencies, funding 33 programs with services in health, education, and self-sufficiency. For more information, call the United Way office at 332-0941 or visit unitedwayodessa.org. School Supply Drive. Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, has scheduled a school supply drive from 9:30 a.m. to noon Sunday. Bring supplies or donate at www.odessaconnection.church/give and note school supply drive. Supply lists can be found at tinyurl.com/y3rjm5fl. Paranormal Circ. Paranormal Circ has been scheduled through Sunday under the black and red big top tent in the parking lot at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Showtimes will take place at 7:30 p.m. Friday and 6:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. Saturday and 5:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Sunday. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YACQ8C3P. Shopping Spree Giveaway and Supply Drive. Music City Mall and MCM Ice has scheduled Skate to School Shopping Spree Giveaway and School Supply Drive during skate sessions from noon to 3 p.m. and 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Saturday at the mall on 42nd Street. Free skate rental when participants bring one unopened school supply or donation to be distributed by Boys and Girls Club of Odessa. $250 Music City Mall shopping sprees will be given away. Visit tinyurl.com/Y2F5FOOR for more information. UTPB prepares to start fall classes. University of Texas Permian Basin is set to welcome students back to the classrooms August 24th. The way students live on campus and engage in classes will look a little different this semester. Navigating these uncertain times has been a challenge, but I am proud of how the university has come together to create a detailed plan for our students, faculty, and staff. We are ready to welcome students back to campus, President Sandra Woodley said in a news release. With the cooperation and care of every member of the Falcon community, the university is confident we can all have a successful fall semester. This fall, UTPB will have three different educational options. 1, on-campus face-to-face classes. 2, fully online courses. 3, hybrid options. Students can choose the path that works best for them, the release said. Accommodations will be made for any student who becomes ill during the semester so he or she can continue academic progress. In a hybrid course, for example, a student with a Monday-Wednesday class might attend in person on Monday, but on Wednesday attend virtually. This method will help maintain smaller class sizes and social distancing. Masks will be required in all UTPB buildings and outdoor community spaces when social distancing isn't possible. On-campus housing will be open for fall 2020, but new protocols will be put in place. Residence Life staff will assign roommates based on athletic partnership or academic discipline. UTPB will also have vacant rooms in the resident hall for isolation spaces if needed. Students will be able to dine at the residence dining hall, student activity center, and the Mesa Cafe. There will be extended hours to serve as many students as possible while still practicing social distancing. No self-serve will be available, but there will be takeout options. These plans reflect current public health guidance from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and are subject to change. Sanitizing stations will be available across campus, and special attention will be paid to cleaning and sanitizing common spaces, labs, and classrooms. For more information, visit utpb.edu/back2campus. HHSC to allow limited visitation at nursing and long-term care facilities. Austin. The Texas Health and Human Services Commission announced Thursday limited visitation rules for nursing facilities and long-term care facilities. HHSC is also issuing enhanced emergency rules requiring additional actions by nursing facilities to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. Nursing facilities. For the health and safety of facility residents and staff, public visitation is limited to outdoor visits only. Physical contact between residents and visitors is not permitted. Additional conditions a facility must meet to conduct limited outdoor visitation include no confirmed positive COVID-19 cases in staff in the last 14 days, no active positive cases in residents, any facility previously experiencing an outbreak that has fully recovered must be adequately staffed and following adequate infection control procedures. Facility staff is being tested for COVID-19 weekly. Further guidance on limited nursing facility visitation rules, which include window visits and vehicle parades, will be posted on the HHSC COVID-19 provider webpage. Long-term care facilities, except nursing facilities. Limited indoor and outdoor visitation procedures are allowed. Physical contact between residents and visitors is not permitted. Additional conditions a facility must meet to conduct limited visitation include no confirmed COVID-19 positive staff in the last 14 days, no active positive cases in residence, adequate staffing to facilitate visitation in compliance with infection control requirements, use of plexiglass as a safety barrier for indoor visitation to prevent spread of COVID-19. further guidance on limited indoor and outdoor visitation rules will be posted on the HHSC COVID-19 provider webpage. Each facility must have a COVID-19 response plan that includes designated staff to work with cohorts of residents who have tested positive for COVID-19, and staff should not change designation from one day to another unless required to maintain adequate staffing for a cohort. All nursing facilities must screen all residents, staff, and people who come to the facility in accordance with specified criteria, and each resident must be screened at least 3 times a day for signs or symptoms of COVID-19. Each facility must have plans for obtaining and maintaining a 2-week supply of personal protective equipment and resident recovery plans for continuing care when a resident recovers from COVID-19. The full emergency rules will be posted on the HHSC COVID-19 provider webpage. The latest guidance for nursing facilities is posted here. Texas HHSC continues to investigate all long-term care facilities in the state that report one or more positive case of COVID-19, as well as coordinate closely with local, state, and federal health authorities. For more information about how HHSC is helping Texans affected by COVID-19, visit the HHSC website. Obituary and death notices for Friday, August 7th, 2020. Elizabeth Joyce Green. Joyce Green, longtime resident of Stephenville and Odessa, passed away July 30th after a brief illness. She was born in Borger to Lee Eugene Pruitt and Dortha Ludima Ward Pruitt. She married Frank Eugene Green in 1980. He passed away in 2016. She is also predeceased by a daughter, Kathy, and 2 brothers, Roger Lee and Carl Jack Pruitt, and a nephew and niece. Joyce is survived by her daughters, Mary Margaret DeFiore, formerly Kujak, and Deborah Louise Chell. Her children by marriage, Cynthia Green Eisen, Larry Jean Green. 10 grandchildren and step-grandchildren and many great-grandchildren, along with nieces, nephews, and cousins. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the American Cancer Society. Online condolences may be made at www.stephenvillefh.com. Death notices. Gilberto Armendariz Hernandez. Gilberto Armendariz Hernandez, 87, of Presidio, died Thursday, August 6th, in Odessa. A chapel service will be held Friday at 2 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Private cremation will follow. Romaldo Hill, Jr. Romaldo Hill, Jr., 61, of Odessa, died Monday, August 3rd. A memorial service will be held at 7 p.m. Friday, August 7th at Buenas Nuevas, with Pastor Wanda Hill officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jorge Leyva. Jorge Leyva, 41, of Presidio, died Monday, August 3rd in Odessa. A funeral service was held Friday, August 7th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Private cremation will follow, with Pastor Emilio Bustamante officiating. Abel A.J. Joshua Luera. Abel Joshua A.J. Luera, 28, died Tuesday, August 4th. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Anita Sue Richmond. Anita Sue Richmond, 62, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 29th. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 8th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Jack Raymond Skiles. Jack Raymond Skiles, 89, of Midland, died Wednesday, August 5th. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.